Welcome to the FemTech Health Podcast. Today, we're joined by Frankie Lee Shelton, the co-founder and director of Programming for Wisdom Medicine. We're going to dive into all things related to root cause medicine, functional medicine, women's health, and the impact of hormonal changes and digestive issues. You're going to learn about the importance of personalized care, the role of consistency in healthcare, the impact of nutrition on health, and the advancements in microbiome testing. All right. Let's get started with today's show.
I'm here today with Frankie Lee Shelton, the co-founder and the director of programming for Wisdom Medicine. Frankie, thank you so much for being here today. And I just want to say one thing really quick before we get started. When you look at root cause medicine, this is why something like Frankie's organization exists, is so that people can have a deep understanding of like where their health issues are coming from, and how do we make them better. So Frankie, welcome to the show today. Tell us a little bit about your story and about how you got involved in loving this work.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This is such an important topic for us to come together around, especially when it pertains to how we can affect better change in women's health and what women have access to in their health. I came into the functional medicine space over a decade ago as a functional nutritionist, actually, through my own health journey and trying to find solutions and answers for things that I was going through. And I felt like I would go to a certain specialist for a certain body part and I would get some answers. And then I go to another specialist for another set of answers. But nobody was really looking at me as a whole person and really looking at also the impact of hormonal changes, the impact of specific issues around my digestion. And so that's really what led me to finding functional medicine. And years later, I found myself now the co-founder of Wisdom Medicine, which is a wonderful collective of naturopathic doctors, women's health specialists, functional medicine doctors, and functional nutritionists that are really serving this root cause approach that you spoke of.
I love this. So this is very proactive medicine and not so reactive, and really just helping people sort of move to the next space. I know some of the things that you look at are, you know, fatigue and brain fog, hormonal issues, digestive issues. So what does it look like, you know, if somebody decides, hey, I really want to get to the bottom of some of these health issues? How would they interact with Wisdom Medicine, and how does it work?
Yes. So we are a nationwide practice. We're completely virtual, which is a wonderful part of being able to serve so many women in so many places. So the way that it works to become one of our patients or clients at Wisdom Medicine is that you actually are matched with one specific provider and then one specific functional nutritionist. So you have two people on your care team in terms of your providers. You see the doctor 6 times over the course of the year, and you see the functional nutritionist 4 times over the course of the year. So we have created the program as a year-long program because we find that some of the things that are missing in conventional care are consistency, being able to have that longer-term relationship develop that doesn't necessarily happen very easily when you have one 20-minute appointment once a year. I know for myself, when I see my conventional doctor, I'm always like, is this it? I'm not going to see you again for a whole other year. We only talk for 20 minutes. So that consistency of care piece is really baked into everything that we do to be able to provide not only the relationship building, but also the monitoring. So working with a Wisdom team, you are able to access all types of advanced testing, functional testing, to really get to those deeper layers of what may be causing your symptoms. And in order to monitor those appropriately and make sure that we're able to pivot protocols, make the right interventions happen, we find that that year-long program is really giving women the care that they need.
So, Frankie, let's just clarify, because, you know, I know some people get confused when they hear, you know, functional medicine, healthcare versus, you know, regular primary care physician. Will you just explain for people maybe who just aren't understanding the differences maybe between those things, just in a little bit more detail? Because I think it will help people get the vision of like, maybe why do I want to do something that's of deeper, you know, like at a deeper root? And I love it that you're saying this consistency pattern, because I think, you know, when you're getting to bottom of something, you really do have to have the consistency, and 20 minutes doesn't work, right? So explain maybe the differences between those two things.
Yeah. So I think one of the initial kind of differences is that conventional medicine is really formed around the diagnosis, right? So we have diagnosis codes in medicine that are very specific in what exactly the criteria are that you have to get a specific diagnosis. And then based off of that diagnosis, you are then recommended a surgery, a medication, a specific protocol based on that diagnosis. And what we see in functional medicine and as a functional medicine perspective on health is that there are a lot of symptoms that can be happening a long, 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 long time before we ever get to be able to categorize something as a diagnosis. And what tends to happen in conventional medicine is that if we haven't checked enough boxes to get to that diagnosis, then we actually are kind of in a place where we're told, come back when it's unbearable, come back when it's worse, come back when it's gotten to a place where you could check all those boxes. And what we're trying to do is catch people in the preventative stage, right? We listen to the red flags. We listen to the warning signs. We say, and we recognize that, you know, most women are experiencing symptoms for 5 to 7 years at least prior to a diagnosis. So we're working with that kind of preventative angle to say, we value that the symptom is happening, that the early warning signs are really, really valuable for you to get the right type of care. And because of that, we're able to go ahead, start earlier, get the testing earlier, understand what are those root causes or underlying things that are causing the symptom to happen in the first place so that we never have to get to a diagnosis.
So Frankie, just share maybe like a little story or somebody who maybe, you know, sort of fit in that wheelhouse of, okay, maybe we caught something way before it could have ever been a diagnosis.
Yes, absolutely. A couple things come to mind. So, you know, I think in terms of something like diabetes, PCOS, right? Those are great things that have, they have a diagnosis, right? They have a specific protocol. They have a specific route in terms of conventional medicine that you might follow as a protocol. But we know that there's early warning signs in terms of blood sugar dysregulation, weight gain, insomnia, energy, fatigue, right? That can start to happen in a woman's 20s, early 30s, even as early as puberty. And what we're saying in terms of looking at that kind of person coming to our practices, how do we start to calm down all of those chaos, right? That's going on in the body, the stress signals that are happening in the body, so that we don't ever get to something where we're having so much blood sugar dysregulation that we end up with PCOS, or so much blood sugar dysregulation that we move from pre-diabetes to diabetes to more of those deeper layers of risk factors, right? So that's one example of how kind of catching things early and saying fatigue is a big enough deal for us that we want to make sure that you have the right energy to feel good and not just wait to say, oh, well, fatigue isn't really a serious enough thing, or blood sugar dysregulation isn't serious enough to warrant a protocol. So that's one way to think about it. A great story that we have in terms of a woman that we helped is also looking at, what if you have something that you've honed in on so much is like your symptom, right? So this woman came to us specifically for chronic UTIs, right? So her whole life, she had been dealing with chronic UTIs, and the doctors had one tool in their toolbox, right? They have antibiotics. Let's treat the UTI, get this patient out of acute urgent need, reduce the risk of kidney issues, right? All of these things that they're doing to mitigate the situation. So years and years of this go by. And finally, when she comes to us, she's like, I've got to get to the, why are these UTIs happening? Like, why is this happening for me on an ongoing basis? Why do I keep having to get these antibiotics over and over again? And what we uncovered is all of these other inflammatory markers that were going on in the body, all of these food intolerance issues that were happening that were causing her to have the chronic UTIs. We're looking at the microbiome and saying, what is actually the bacteria that's contributing to the UTIs to come back over and over again in that bacterial ecosystem. And because we were able to kind of unpack the whole picture, she got all of these bonus side effects. Not only did she not have the UTIs anymore, but she also had more energy. She had less bloating, right? Her skin's cleared up and got better than she ever even thought was possible, right? So it's that kind of downstream effect of saying there's a lot of reasons that this one symptom or this one thing is happening over and over again. And how do we unpack it to get to the point where the body is able to return to homeostasis, return to better balance, and get all of these other benefits along the way?
So I love that, you know, kind of goes back to, you know, being, you know, sort of getting that whole proactive part of it, because what woman doesn't have chronic fatigue? And maybe not as a true diagnosis of a chronic fatigue, but, you know, most of the women I know are working so much, whether it be at their offices, whether it be at their homes, with their family systems, et cetera. A lot of people have fatigue. And I love it that you're saying, hey, there's something that we actually do about that, you know, brain fog, fatigue. And before it becomes a huge issue. So let's jump then to the idea of that. What about reversing disease? Is there possibilities to assist with the kind of work that you do at Wisdom Medicine to help disease that maybe has been turned on kind of settle back down, especially when we're talking about autoimmune diseases and things of that nature?
Yes. So I really like to think of disease as exactly, you know, how it's spelled, right? Like it's dis-ease. It's a lack of balance or an imbalance in the body. It's also a sign that there's certain systems of the body that are under a lot of stress, under a lot of strain, right? So from a functional perspective, we kind of look at six different systems of the body. We look at the hormone system, the immune system, the digestive system, detoxification, energy production, the nervous system, right? So we're kind of saying, where is the strain and stress hidden in the body? And how do we actually address that and unpack it so that we can correct each system to the point where the disease state is not able to set in? Right? Because really at the root of disease, we have that imbalance, we have that stress and strain, and we're asking too much of that system of the body. Whereas when we look at the body as an integrative system, we know that all the systems actually depend on one another. They work together. They are they're connected in that way. And that if we can help really get to health in one system, we get to health in all systems, right? We kind of help to bring the body along in that way. When it comes to autoimmunity, which we know about 75 to 80% of all autoimmunity is happening in women's health. We know that there is so much that we can do to calm the autoimmune attack down. And that's really the way that I like to frame it is that we're actually looking at autoimmunity as a systemic issue, right? Even if you say have a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis, say, for example, right? So you have a target that the autoimmune has attacked that is wearing down that specific myelin sheath around the nervous system. We also can back up from that and say, we're not going to just look at this patient as an MS patient. We're going to back up and say, autoimmunity is happening. It's a systemic issue. How do we calm down the autoimmunity on all fronts? Increase digestive health, increase immune resilience, increase hormonal balance, right? So that the autoimmune attack doesn't, one, continue attacking and doesn't find new targets to attack, right? So think about it in terms of like the likelihood of somebody with a thyroid issue or an autoimmune attack of the thyroid, much, much more likely to develop another autoimmune disease because that inherent systemic piece of autoimmunity is just kind of hiding and waiting for the next target.
I appreciate what you're saying about the thyroid because I think people maybe don't have the vision of like, okay, you know, the thyroid runs the show of some things, right? Or they integrate easily with, you know, reproductive hormones and then, you know, adrenals, and the thyroid is sort of in that whole axis so that if you know, you have one disease that's messing with a thyroid. Now, you know, a whole disease process starts up there. Now I have all these other ones that play off of each other. And I think that's where all this integration comes, is people having the vision of, hey, you get one autoimmune disease. That's why it's so easy, you know, for something else to sort of happen. And then you open yourself up to autoimmune diseases. And then you look at all these other viral loads that sit in our systems, right? That suddenly mm-hmm. might bubble up because I don't have that stabilized. And I think, you know, I hear stories over and over again of, you know, people who, you know, maybe had a thyroid issue and then, you know, their Epstein-Barr titers go through the roof and they didn't realize they had Lyme's disease from years ago. And, you know, all these things lead to what? Fatigue and brain fog and people don't feeling good, but they may only feel the symptoms or they don't know where it all came out of. And I guess I just want to encourage people, and especially women because of autoimmune diseases, that there's help for this and they're not alone out there just imagining the fact that they have hormonal issues and they have, you know, brain fog and fatigue and they're run down and they, you know, they want to blame it on, you know, just all kinds of a million other things. Oh, it's just because mm-hmm. of my stress. And I'm like, well, stress is absolutely a part of it. But when the system starts to break down, right, we need intervention from someone like you to help us, right, move through there. And I guess I just want people to have hope for this. So share, like, I know you were in private practice for a while and you came into this more, this bigger arena. And I want to know why you did that. And just share with us a little bit about what drove you to do that. Because I know you're so driven because you understand this.
Mm-hmm. I think the thing that drives me the most is that I really want women to, like you said, like know that they deserve quality of life, right? Like that they deserve the health that they seek and that it's possible. And I think that for me, moving into a position like founding Wisdom Medicine, it makes the reach so much more possible, right? There's only so many women that you can work with one-to-one or so many women you can reach in private practice, but to bring a team of providers together that all have that same intention, that same purpose, that same drive in order to help enhance women's quality of life and the possibility of making that happen. To me, it really is filling such an important gap that we have in healthcare. And part of it goes into, you know, that women are just socialized to anticipate pain, right? We're told from a very, very young age that you're going to have this period every month and it's going to suck and it's going to be a horrible week every month, you know, and that we're just trained by society, trained maybe by the, you know, women that have come before us. Like this is just a part of what you have to go through as a woman. And to me, I feel like if we can start to change that story and we can start to really value our own health and not put everybody else's health and well-being in front of our own, right? Then we actually are able to have quality of life, have clarity, have confidence. I think that there's a huge piece of women not feeling well that plays into their confidence, right? Like think about it from a perspective of even brain fog, right? One of the most common symptoms that women experience due to hormonal issues or digestive issues, how that affects their confidence, their word retrieval, their memory, their ability to do the job that they want to get done in a day, right? That all plays together in terms of creating a really healthy, vital, vibrant form of well-being that I think every woman really deserves. And in the United States, women make up 80% of the healthcare decisions in their households. 80%, whether they're making decisions for themselves, their husbands, their partners, their children, but they are the ones that are least served by the medical system.
I think that's absolutely true. I think, you know, 80 to 90% of all healthcare decisions, I think we talked about this before, are made by women. And yet they're kind of the last one in the lineup, whoever goes out to actually get help. And, you know, the way this is all set up with Wisdom Medicine, it fascinates me because people can do this from home or work or at night, or like they just figure out when their providers how to do this. And then that serves women too, because they're so responsible for everybody all the time that sometimes they can't even figure out how to get their own appointment in. And then they can't follow through sometimes with all the things that come. So, Frankie, I'm going to segue a little bit, because I know sometimes people, when they go to a functional medicine, you know, for integrative care, sometimes they can get overwhelmed because suddenly they get this whole stack of supplements or they get all this stuff and they just don't even know where to start. And so in my own practice, a lot of times what happens is, you know, I'll get a woman who's decided, hey, I'm going to do this. And, you know, they get into somebody and they get all these things, but then they really know where to start, or they don't know where to, you know, if they have trouble or they're not sure what's going on, they're not sure how to integrate. And I think this is the great part about your program at Wisdom, is that they have a next appointment. They have the next step. And then someone like our teams are not having to help them. They're actually able to work through, like, oh, yes, if I need to use certain things, or maybe I think something's not working, they have you available. So talk to us sort of about how you do the testing, how you go through these steps, because I think people need to understand this is a different kind of program. This is not just like, you know, seeing somebody. I mean, I just had somebody who saw a functional medicine, person and basically had all these things and couldn't get in to see him again for 3 or 4 months. And they didn't even know where to start. They thought maybe some of this stuff was bothering them and they were so frustrated. They were about to give up. I was like, no, I don't want you to give up. Let's help you process through. But I think that's where the beauty of your work and your program comes in. So share about that.
Yeah, so I'm so glad that you brought this up, because I think it is really a mindset change of like what healthcare can look like, just even taking that step to look out for a functional medicine doctor, but then to take it to the next level and say the healthcare experience can also function very differently. And I think a few things that we really take seriously is getting women in when they need to be seen as quickly as possible. So even as a new patient with us, we can get a new patient in within 2 weeks. That's our dedication to our patient base, is that by the time they find us, they have been through so much. Yeah. We're not going to tell them that they have to wait 3 months to get in with our doctor, right? So we make sure that we have that accessibility. But it also continues to play out through the rest of their year of working with us. So like you said, they know exactly that when their next appointments are going to be, that they're going to see one of our providers every month to month and a half for the whole course of the year. And I think that it's not that we are not going to get solutions in a timely manner, but there's also no rush, right? There's not this, we have to do everything at one time. We have to get you 5 functional tests. And then when we get those results back, give you 25 supplements based off of those 5 tests, right? Which is what most of the time is happening, right? And then you have these 25 supplements and you're like, what's working? What's not? Is it helping? Right? So we can pace things. I think that that's the part of consistency of care that's beautiful, is that you can pace it to a place where it is digestible, understandable. There's time for explaining. And we're not in a rush, right? We have a year of working together. We can peel back one layer. We can do one test at a time. That's the highest priority. Get relief from those symptoms. Do a protocol from start to finish, and then move on to the next piece in order to really get the full care picture fleshed out over the course of a year. And that feeling of just not being rushed, being heard, being listened to. For our providers, we really want them to be able to do what they came to medicine to do, is be able to be with their patients. And we allow for, you know, 30, 45 minute, 60 minute appointments so that they can truly spend the time that it takes to do this type of work. Because it's one thing to say we're going to be a functional medicine clinic and then still try to smush everything into one, you know, 20 minute visit a year. It doesn't really work. Right? Or even every 3 to 6 months wouldn't work. We really need that consistency of care, seeing their provider on a regular basis, and having the length of time in the appointment to really understand and get the education that goes along with it.
And so how do you see, like, your people responding to that? Like how, you know, what are you seeing in the net out of that consistency of care, that access, maybe peeling back one layer at a time? Like what is the response pattern been?
Well, about 94% of our patients will report and just an improved understanding of how their body works. What is, you know, how their health works, right? I think that oftentimes health is like this goal that we're going for, but it's like we actually need to understand how health works, right? Like what are the mechanisms that help the body to feel healthy, to be healthy? Also, right around the same amount, 94% of patients testify that they have a testimonial that say that they rate their doctor as one of the best doctor experiences they've ever had, right? That they've ever able to get to know their doctor, that they have a relationship with their doctor, that they feel like somebody's in their corner with them. And so to me, I think the timing and the amount of education that our doctors provide for their patients is like hands down one of the biggest gifts. When somebody asks me, well, what if it doesn't work? Right. Well, what if does this work for everybody? What is the guarantee? Right. We get those questions a lot. And I can always guarantee you will know your body better than you ever did when you came in. Right. Like, and that to me is like, and as you know, in the work that you do, it's like that education, that understanding of what's happening in our bodies, that empowerment to be able to then advocate for ourselves. Not just over the course of the year, but for the rest of our life is such a gift to be able to take away.
So I just, you know, want to, because so many people that we see, you know, in the pelvic health world, women's health, they have so many gut issues. You know, they've got bloating, they have constipation, they have diarrhea, they just never really feel good. They can't figure out what to eat and what to not eat. And you know, just saying that, you know, if you look at the data, right, like gut health, you know, 90% of the serotonin is made in the GI tract. And so you're like, okay, so you can see then if our GI tract's not very happy, then is our brain happy? So talk a little bit about, you know, people get so lost in this whole foodie thing and there's so much foodie stuff going on that it can be exhausting for women. And, you know, don't throw in the whole other thing about, you know, BMIs and what we look like in our bathing suit and, you know, all that lovely business, right? But I'm just saying, let's just talk really about why you and I care about GI health and what are we doing in order to make that better so that you and I feel better?
Yeah. So, you know, to me, I think it's really overcoming such a long history of restriction, such a long history of confusion around food. I always like to think of food as the longest relationship we'll ever have, right? And so we better make it a good one and do what we can to nurture it and to care for it and to pay attention to it. And I think that especially when it comes to women's health, because we are up against this, you know, this history of how diet culture has really affected our relationship with food. I think that we sometimes need to have the time and the space to recraft that relationship with our diet. And that's one of the reasons I loved having the functional nutritionist on the team as well. Because even though our doctors are very well versed in digestive health, it's oftentimes we know that we need that extra support. How do we actually do this when the rubber hits the road, when we need a behavior change, when we need to craft a diet in a different way, when we need to bring in more food than we're used to? And how do we make sure that we're doing it in a way that's very personalized? I think that that's where there's been so much unfortunate confusion in the world of nutrition is because everybody has like the new diet, the new thing that's going to solve everything, right? And we lost touch with that personalization. Five women could come in with the same symptoms and actually need five different recommendations when it comes to nutrition and diet because of their lifestyle, because of their history, because of their food intolerances, because of what's going on in their microbiome. And so to have that personalized touch gives the possibility for our digestive health to operate better, to not only be able to assimilate foods or absorb from the foods that we're eating, but also to be able to have healthy good bowel movements that we can depend on. You know, I think all of that is, it has such a huge influence on our quality of life. And when we get used to our norm being discomfort, difficulty with bowel movements, right? Digestive bloating, things like this, that's very easy to just become, well, that's just me. That's just how my digestive system works. But not knowing that there's this other way to be able to find out what's really going on and be able to get to a place where they have a personalized plan.
I think too, you know, when you look at, you know, food is energy, right? And it actually fuels our system so that we feel good. So, you know, one of the things that we talk a lot about, you know, because we work in the musculoskeletal world, right? You know, we have somebody healing from, you know, post-surgical or from an injury, et cetera. And, you know, to restrict calories or to, you know, decrease calories or during that time frame or not have the right mix of food patterns, right? You know, just like, you know, if someone's a pre-diabetic or a type 1 diabetic, you know, it's so important. I think, you know, I love that you said that our relationship with food really is the longest relationship we ever had, but food is supposed to be of great joy and it should be taken in with a good feeling about a foodie pattern, right? Not like these negative feelings about food that I'm uptaking. And I think, you know, what you're talking about to me is because you have, you know, nutritionists functionally who are working with patients, it helps to maybe reset people's vision of like what food is. Because I know, you know, like with some of our endometriosis patients, it's tough, you know, when they have, you know, food intolerances that are so associated with their disease process, right? You know, maybe that, you know, they might have growth in the cul-de-sac between the vaginal wall and the rectal pouch. So they're not able to have a good bowel movement, right? So what happens is that then all food becomes kind of negative. And, you know, sometimes I'll get a woman who's down to eating 3 or 4 things and that's all she ever eats. And then once she does have surgery and she's doing so much better, then trying to reintroduce foods right back into her life because she has this terrible fear avoidance of everything. Mm-hmm. And so I think you said it, you nailed it. Like we have to redefine our relationships with food, right? Because maybe, you know, there was diagnosis patterns or maybe there wasn't. Maybe there was just constant pain. And constant, you know, feelings like something's never right in my GI tract. And so then we become afraid to even enjoy food or even have a good relationship with food. And, you know, think of it like this too, Frankie, our athletes are no different. You know, they're working at, when we worked with the ballet, it was super interesting. You know, they, of course, have to have a certain body type, right? Mm-hmm. In order to continue in that. And, you know, we were finding, you know, at the beginning, you know, of a season, well, everybody looked good. Everybody's healthy and there was no injuries. And of course, as you know, you start training 6 days a week, you know, 7, 8 hours a day. And then we actually met with them at a lunchtime to figure out, okay, well, what are they actually eating? You know, what is their eating patterns? And we're realizing like, hey, there's just not enough on board, you know, to even keep them sustained. So no wonder their injury rate, you know, like went through the roof. Yeah. But I think this is the beauty of what you're talking about is helping women realize and men and family systems, right? Because we're changing the whole family system. When a woman gets healthy, yes. right? Now yes. she then teaches her children and her husband and like everyone inside the picture, right? Their whole community of people. Hey, these are the ways that maybe we will feel better, you know, with food intake. And, you know, as you said, the GI tract is a component of it, but like, how does the neurological system feel if every time you eat, you know, you feel like this?
Yes. Well, and how are we supposed to have the backbone source material to create hormones? I mean, I think that that's a huge missing link in terms of all of this restriction that we see in women's health and what we see in terms of patterns of fat reduction, low fat, no fat diets. Well, hormones are made from fat, right? We need fat in the diet in order to have healthy thyroids and in order to have healthy progesterone production in order to have healthy adrenal function, right? Not to mention fat is what our brain is made of. And we need fat for our brain processing, right? So I think that there's this whole real educational missing link in terms of what we think of and what is good food and how do we organize a diet to be able to make sure that we're getting all of those parts and pieces. I think protein is another piece of this, right? Like I think protein in terms of really understanding the quantity of protein that we need for regeneration, rehabilitation, for our ability to heal the, you know, injury and pain reduction, right? All of those things that are so, so important to have. And if we're really getting into these patterns of restriction and getting down to, like you're saying, the three or four foods that we're allowing ourselves to eat, everything in the digestive system will acclimate to that, right? So our enzyme function will decrease. Our feeling of bloating will increase if we try to expand into more food groups, right? Like there's all these things that our body will adjust to, but they're not ultimately giving us that diet is not ultimately able to give us the building blocks that we need to be able to have a good quality of life and a good functioning system. So I never see a woman that has a digestive issue that doesn't have a hormone issue and vice versa. It go hand in hand.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And I think that's such a tricky part when you start looking at people's patterns. And, you know, you brought it up with injury and these sorts of things. Like, you know, where if someone does, I mean, in our work, if someone does have an injury and they're trying to regenerate or heal, that's one of the first things we'll say to them, like, oh, well, how is your eating patterns going? How's your sleeping patterns going? You know, where how is all of that happening? And then you realize suddenly that, you know, somebody isn't even getting enough protein to actually even heal their injury. I mean, you know, a lot of times we'll end up saying, hey, you know, increase your protein by 20 to 30% because you realize they're not even in the neighborhood of what they should have every day for protein. Mm-hmm. And I love what you brought out about the fat for the brain, because I think people don't really realize that the brain needs that. Mm-hmm. You know, people kind of get disconnected from the fact that, you know, even just like neurally, think of it, your hardwiring has what fatty tissue around the neural information going up the superhighway. And if I suddenly decrease all this fat in my diet, what's happening? I'm decreasing that neural information. And think of it in the musculoskeletal world, in the brain world, and all of our organ world. We can't have that. We need efficiency of that, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that with protein, too, a big thing that I would love to have all women realize and kind of come to appreciate is that as we age, you know, it's less important to be thin and it's much more important to be strong. And we have to flip that narrative around in women's health, because what we really need to be strong is we need protein. Right. We need the building blocks in the diet that are actually going to allow us to build muscle and allow us to have bone density over time, allow us to thrive into our older years, you know, postmenopausal years, that allow us to continue to have good integrity in our musculoskeletal system. And so I absolutely agree. I think that there's a whole rewiring that often needs to happen in terms of really valuing our nutrition, being able to be precise and informed about how to fuel ourselves and where that energy comes from. So, so very important.
So let's just shift a little bit, because, you know, you hear all these things right now just about the whole idea of, you know, epigenetics, you know, the biochemistry, the bioengineering, and all of these things. And, you know, it's interesting. I was listening to just some work on, you know, integrative health and all of that. And they were saying, you know, building a resilient immune system is so important. And they actually believe that, like, we're in the renaissance of the science of epigenetics. And I find that sort of fascinating. And I just want to hear your input, like, about it, because I feel like we know so much more because we know so much more about microbiomes. We're not just talking about prebiotics and probiotics, because everyone in my office will come in if they have a bloated belly and say to me already, or a constipation or things of that. Oh, I already take those. That's not a thing. And you're like, okay, wait a minute. So talk to me about, like, how come you think we're learning, you know, what all this learning is doing for us and how it's going to move us forward. Because I really do believe you're on the cutting edge and on the leading edge of this integrative health work. And I think that's a beautiful thing.
Yes. I mean, I think that it gives the power back to the patient, you know, that what you're doing in the day to day, you have the ability to turn switches on or off. Right. And I think that that's really kind of a general way to think about epigenetics in terms of what are the inputs that we're giving? What are we feeding when we're feeding ourselves? Right. That's another one to think about in terms of the impact of the microbiome on how everything functions, the impact of our hormones on how everything functions, that we have the choice to have the inputs that are going to help us thrive, or the inputs that are going to cause us to be more inflamed, less resilient, right? More susceptible to disease states in the future. And I think that if we can start to take our health and value our health and take our health seriously and realize the impact that we can have when we kind of take the reins back and say, I do have an influence over how I feel. I do have an influence over how I recover, how I thrive. That to me is going to change the whole conversation around what healthcare is. I kind of like to think about it as health plus, right? We've lived in a time of healthcare that really does suit the need of disease and like we were saying earlier, of diagnosis. But if we start to shift to health plus, or, you know, health, et cetera, right? And we start to think about all the things that influence us, not just, oh, my parents had this, I'm going to have it too, right? Like, I think that that's been a generational mindset that we've been with, is like, we're just hiding and waiting, or waiting for that shoe to drop, for the thing that's been running in our family for generations to come to us. Oh, I have cancer in my family. I have diabetes in my family, right? But what we now know is that when we look at the microbiome and we look at these underlying root cause markers, we can actually say, from a genetic perspective, from a microbiome perspective, and these are the things that we really need to pay attention to. These are the things that need to be adjusted. This is where we need to do an intervention. And we can actually totally change not only our story, but our kids' story, right? What comes down the line from us. And that is such a more hopeful vision of what health can be and what healthcare can be.
Well, I know, you know, sometimes I'll get a woman in, you know, who's learned some of these things, that she might say, oh, you know, I have the MTHFR gene or something like that, you know, and I have one snippet and, oh my gosh, I'm never going to have a quality of life. I want you to address this idea of what the quality of life is, because all of us have crazy circumstances that our life, you know, you get your genes that you get, right? But it's the expression of these genes and how we actually interact with them. I know that sounds crazy, but, you know, one of my physicians, you know, he's a brilliant guy, but never really sleeps. And, you know, he went to a big non-pharma conference and he came back. I said, oh, what was the best thing you learned? And he said that I actually need to get more sleep. So long term, I'm healthier. Yeah. And long term, my brain works at the highest level that it can. Because for whatever reason, you know, he was sleeping 3 or 4 hours a night. It's just not enough, right, for us to actually have good gene expression. I think people understanding that, right, is such a powerful thing, instead of leaning into the fact of, oh, you know, my dad died at 75. I guess I'm going to die at 75. It's like, what? Like, no, not with the things that you and I know now, right, in comparison. Oh, yeah.
In comparison, it's huge.
Yes, I think that's why when this integrative physician was like, hey, we're in the renaissance of this. I was like, wow, like this is really powerful work, right? That we can actually change, you know, this expression, even though maybe we do have a snippet of this. How do we get help people have quality of life? I do believe that that's what your work is doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, right. And you can, I totally hear you on the point of like so many people getting genetic testing done and then it kind of propelling this fear state or this guarded state of, well, this is just, you know, what my genetic makeup is. And I think that if we take, that's where having a really good provider comes in really handy, right? Is to say, okay, this is what we found on the genetic testing and this is how we need to craft and personalize a plan for you that's going to optimize your health. Like a really good example is the genetic marker for cholesterol, like how we process and handle cholesterol. So two people can have high cholesterol, but one person can have a genetic marker that's okay for them to have that higher cholesterol. Another person, it's going to put them at higher risk for cardiovascular disease. But knowing those things really helps you to personalize where to prioritize your focus and your health. It's really, really very powerful information. I think too, another piece of this is that if we look at something like the microbiome, I have, like I said, I've been practicing for a little over a decade in this world, but even in that time, and I'm, you know, a baby in the world of medicine, I've seen such an advancement in the microbiome testing that we're able to have access to. The microbiome testing that we use at Wisdom now actually lays out for patients 8 to 10 markers that are specific to autoimmunity, right? So we can catch specific bacteria before any symptom of an autoimmune disease it could even be picked up or felt, just knowing that those bacteria are lurking and kind of growing and the population is there actually helps us to revamp, get things rebalanced before that autoimmune disease ever has to, you know, have the opportunity to set up shop. And so those things are so powerful. That was sci-fi futuristic if we were to think about what we could do looking at poop under a microscope 15 years ago, you know? I mean, we've come so far. And it's really, really exciting for the preventative possibilities around it.
So explain to everybody, you know, if they come into your program, I just want them to understand, you know, because they're seeing these people virtually, right? But how does their testing get to them? Like, how does all that go on? And so share that, because I know that is a huge issue for people, because people get confused in that and the whole virtual world sometimes of healthcare and overall health. They're not sure, well, how does it all work?
Yes. So oftentimes we're actually able to use insurance for blood work. So blood work is something that's often covered. There may be a few markers, advanced fat thyroid panels, things like that, that aren't able to be covered under insurance. But for the most part, we do try to use insurance for blood work. And that's where you'll get an order sent to you and you'll be able to go to a local lab to get that blood work done just like you would in conventional medicine. So the blood work piece is pretty similar. Where we start to get into advanced testing and functional testing, those are actual kits that get sent to you at your home. And those kits are able to be used as your kind of sampling station. So whether you're collecting your urine for your hormonal testing or you're collecting your stool sample for your microbiome testing, some of them are blood prick tests that you can use for things like food intolerance testing. So there's so much that we can do through these kits that then gets collected in the privacy of your own home, sent into the lab, the results come in, and then we're able to interpret and implement based off of those findings. And those are very, very informative tests. They go above and beyond what we're able to identify in blood work. And I think that's another place we're at a total revolutionary place in terms of how we're doing collecting. What kind of new test kits are out there in the realm of women's health that are so exciting, you know, just in terms of how we're going to get earlier and earlier diagnosis for these chronic conditions. I think it's just I just am so excited for what the next 10 years is going to bring in that regard. But I think that those kits, getting access to that deeper level of data is life-changing, absolutely, to be able to say, what are my, by collecting a urine sample for 4 times, you get to see what your cortisol levels are throughout the day, throughout the night. You get to see what your estrogen, progesterone, testosterone levels are. How is your body metabolizing your hormones? What's your liver function? What are your organic acids saying in terms of your, like you were saying earlier, how's your serotonin production? How is your norepinephrine production? All of these things that we can now find through these different forms of testing is really, really a game changer for what you're able to make moves on, what's going to actually be able to get you different outcomes in your health.
I love this. I think for women in particular, and you know, there's this whole, you know, health initiative for women, perimenopause and menopause. And I just can't tell you how excited I am about a lot of this testing that is actually coming out now so that we can actually help women know for their particular, you know, genetics, hey, this is the best, because now you're personalizing this so personal to them of what they actually need. And I think that's the beauty of all this, because then that whole perimenopause, menopause timeframe is going to improve so significantly because we're so specifically looking at them. We're not just saying, oh, it looks like you're heading into perimenopause, menopause. Oh, here's this stuff, mm-hmm. you know.
Or better yet, what I heard from a woman the other day was, she said, you know, I was starting to feel hot at night. And, you know, it wasn't really a hot flash or a night sweat, but I was just starting to get uncomfortable. And I went to my gynecologist about it and said, hey, like, I'm 45. Is this what's happening? Is this the time that everybody talks about? And the gynecologist told her, well, you should just go ask your mother what her experience was with menopause. And that was the medical advice that this woman left with in terms of what to do about perimenopause. And I think that is such an interesting myth in terms of, or like a fascinating myth in terms of prevention, because we know that perimenopause goes on for years, right? This is an early warning sign that somebody's bringing in and saying, hey, I'm starting to feel a little uncomfortable at night. I'm feeling a little temperature change, thermodysregulation. If we could take that woman at that stage and provide an intervention, provide supports, do some deeper levels of testing, we would be looking at 7 years, 12 years of change of quality of life, better sleep, better mood, better, less fatigue. But instead she's sent home and told, you know, check in on your family history and see what your mom says. Like that it's so short-sighted in terms of what is actually going to be useful for that woman.
And I think it's so interesting because, you know, when you look at this health initiative that, you know, Dr. Jill Biden kind of started out with, and it moved into this area of, you know, perimenopause and menopause, it kind of fascinated me, you know, because so much of life for women is always focused on their reproductive years, right? But we don't really realize, you know, that reproductive window, you know, is a period of time, but then we are looking to have a quality of life, right, with our kids and our family and long term. And I'm like, okay, it's about time, right?
Yeah.
It's about time that you and I all start to have this deep conversation about, like, what is a woman's right, you know, after her reproductive rights, right? What are her rights actually for her physical realm to actually feel good, you know, for the next till they're 100, right? And mm-hmm. I was looking at some of the stuff that says, oh, you know, so much of, you know, what's available to us in the regenerative medicine world and all of the things that you and I are learning about in this Renaissance time is going to afford us to live longer, right? But is there a quality of life in living longer if we're not actually addressing these deep things at the root before they show up? Because think of it, if we can ward them off at the age of 45, instead of waiting till somebody's 65 and so miserable, you know, they can't stand it. I think this is where the beauty of this medicine is happening. And I want everybody to understand how easy it is to be able to get this testing and do this testing at home, send that back in, and then all of that's going to be analyzed. And because you're doing a full year program with Wisdom, you're going to get that in-depth, like, oh, this is working. Oh, that's still not working. Okay, we're going to unpeel the onion skin so now we can help you keep moving. I think, again, that's the beauty of it, because we just don't have enough, you know, providers, boots on the ground who do functional medicine work for everybody to get into in all these communities. And I think this is the beauty of having this virtual and telehealth work, right? Because now we can provide access to really good, consistent care over that, you know, space of the year.
So absolutely. I mean, I think that the reach into, like, we know from a healthcare standpoint that the rural communities are struggling the most, right? Like, we're seeing hospitals close, we're seeing consolidation of healthcare organizations that are really pulling some of these resources that are so vital to rural communities into the urban areas. And I think that that's one of the things I'm really passionate about the virtual telehealth services, is that with podcasts and things like this, you know, women are, they're aware that this type of thing is out there, but they're not seeing it in their small town and they're not seeing it in their own doctor's office. But to make it as convenient and as possible for them as the woman living in Portland, Oregon, is extremely, extremely important, and that we start to kind of level this playing field a bit in terms of who gets access to this type of care is a really important thing for us to all work towards.
I just want to share too, because part of our audience is pelvic health audience and some cancer type diagnoses with breast cancer, gynecological cancers, et cetera, is that, you know, just understanding and knowing too that, you know, vulvular health, vaginal health is directly related to GI health and brain health. And that all goes together. So I don't think, you know, by the time someone comes into my office with, you know, vulvovaginal atrophy or, you know, things of that nature happening, whether it be because of oncology issues or whether it just be because of perimenopause or menopause, or maybe they're just postpartum, we don't want to not be talking about how the brain and the GI tract and the vulva, that whole region interacts together. So if I have somebody who's getting chronic UTIs, and, you know, I had a woman in my office, you know, 7 UTIs in 1 year. And, you know, of course, everybody wants to, you know, blame it on, oh, you know, she's kind of moving into the perimenopause neighborhood, da, da, da. But I want people to understand and know the first thing in my mind is like, hey, what's going on in her gut tract? You know, our immunity lives in our GI tract, our skin and our GI tract. So if we see things, well, that whether it's vulvarly, you know, with skin care, or whether it's in the GI tract, it's, you know, itself, we know those two things integrate. And we can't keep ignoring women. I guess this is, you know, the point of this is that we can't keep ignoring them and sort of saying, hey, oh, you know, too bad for you. You had all these. Oh, then add on the fact that they had antibiotics 7 times that year. And then we go back to, oh, their GI tract, right? So this is where I think this work of integrative health is so powerful, because of course we know that the brain, the GI tract, and the floor are off from each other. Something's not right. And, you know, if you look at, you know, just E. coli alone being in the GI tract, and it's, you know, festers and agitates a whole lot of things, right? If it's there, it's kind of one of the most common things that's present. And a lot of people will have a low growth of that happening, mm-hmm. and they don't even know it, right? Or they're decreasing estrogen. And now we know with a decrease in estrogen, maybe we don't have as much binding in the GI tract, and then it leans more towards a leaky gut and whatever. And so I think this is why the beauty, you know, this whole idea of renaissance or whatever you want to call it, is like, it's the beauty of this integrative care, because it's going now to someone's quality of life, right? Like, you know, that's one of the biggest reasons a woman is put in a nursing home is because she has a leaky bladder, she has incontinence, when mm-hmm. we could actually be addressing this way down over here, you know, mm-hmm. as a root cause, like you said, in the microbiome way before we get down to here. So by the time someone's in my office with 7 UTIs, you know, and maybe they've been given some estrogen in the floor, which is lovely, and it's all part of it, my mind's running circles of like, uh-oh, where's their GI tract? And then guess what then? And you know this already too, but the brain is affected. So many of my women start to get what? A little bit of anxiety, a little bit of depression, because that whole system is off.
Mm-hmm.
And address a little bit of the mental health component, right? If we do not have, you know, these systems integrating well, right?
Mm-hmm. No, it's so, so true. And I think that if we look at the most, you know, the highest number of prescriptions for in women's health are anti-anxiety, antidepressants that have a big influence on their microbiome. But then it's like the snake that eats itself, right? Because that microbiome depletion, that change in the microbiome has an effect on the mental health as well. And so if we, one, are, you know, we have to be eating the right things, the right combination of things, but we also have to be able to absorb those things to be able to synthesize and create those neurotransmitters in the gut. And I think that that's really where we see such a disconnect in not having gut testing as a regular routine. Like, wouldn't it be an amazing world if everybody got gut tested, just like when they got their blood work done, right? Because I think that the things that we would find and that the reasons that we would actually be able to uncover, why does this woman have chronic low ferritin or low iron? Why does this woman, you know, have fatigue because she has no B12? And why isn't she absorbing that B12 from the foods that she's eating, right? Like, we're missing so many of these key indicators as to why the mental health gets so far down the road, why the mental health becomes what it becomes, especially in those two cases. When we think about something like B12 deficiency, iron deficiency, we know that they're two of the biggest causes for anxiety and depression. Well, if the gut isn't working to absorb from the foods that we're eating, that's going to be a huge obstacle to being able to have better mental health. So it all is so truly tied together. You know, I think too, what we've talked about before, like the stress and the constriction and the inability to have an ecosystem that is able to absorb because of stress and strain on it. I think all of those things, you know, it does take a full body approach and a full body look at how all these things work together.
So, Frankie, we're just going to shift gears for a second because you are a founder and the work that you do. I just want to jump into your role as this leader of a company, right? Because I think women like to hear other women explain part of their journey. So I want you to just tell me like one thing in the last year that you've really grown in or learned about yourself because you've been in this role.
Yes. Yeah, so being a co-founder, you know, I think one of the things that I try to stay very close to is I think that we have the responsibility to ourselves to remain connected to what helps us to feel wild and free. And that if we can find those things in our own life that help us, that light us up, that help us to remember connection, not only to the people that we love, but the beautiful world around us. Like, I think all of those things we have to keep having as a priority as we become busier, as we become more responsible for more things, as we become, you know, as I become a co-founder, I think it's become more and more important because that is really what continues to create and fuel that energy, that innovation, that ability to keep showing up day after day. And I think when you're doing what you love and you're doing what you really believe in, it's really boundless what you're able to do, right? Like what you're able to accomplish. Because we really feel, you know, when we're co-founders, we really believe so much in what we're doing, but not to forget that we have to have that refueling of ourselves, right? And to me, framing it like that is, you know, what helps me feel wild and free is it goes so much farther for me than like a pedicure and a manicure. Not that those things are not nice, but I think that we have to think about self-care a little broader, right? And tap into those parts of ourselves too.
Mm-hmm. I love it. So this, you know, getting into this position of your life, how do you now handle some of the adversity that comes, you know, because you obviously have this wild and free part of your spirit. And then what do you do with that adversity? Because this is part of what happens for women, you know, when they enter into this space as being founders and co-founders and leaders, is that now, you know, we have so much on our plate already. And then what do we do with all those feelings of adversity?
For me, I think that staying close to a network of women that are doing similar work and also realizing that we're a part of a much larger movement is very, very helpful for me. It simultaneously gives me a bank of really amazing resources of women that I can turn to and say, hey, I'm experiencing this. Have you ever experienced this? How do I get through this? You know, how do I make that next step or overcome this obstacle? But also it just helps to not feel alone in it, right? That we're not isolated in what we're doing, that we're actually a part of something so much bigger. And I think especially in the world of women's health, we've had such an amazing last several years in terms of seeing so many companies come to fruition, so many women's leaders being able to step into these really powerful roles and doing it differently, right? I think that that's the beauty that we have to see in this stage of the women's health movement, is that we're really seeing that business can be done differently, that we can take care of ourselves, take care of one another, that it's not about more, but about quality. I think it are all things that really help me to, when I am faced with adversity, when I'm faced with challenge, just to kind of keep those things in mind is very, very helpful.
So, Frankie, with your company and where you're going, what are you hoping to accomplish this next year? Like, what's something that your company just feels so passionate about and that really wants to accomplish in this next year?
We are refocusing on partnership. You know, I think that that's part of being a key integral part of the women's health movement right now in the digital health space, is that I think partnership is everything. I think that's how we truly can create these wraparound services to better serve women, is through partnership, through not saying that we have to be the only person on their healthcare team, but that we support them in having a really thriving, well-rounded healthcare team around them. I think that the partnership piece to me is one of our biggest focuses over the next year. And just to be able to tap into not just referral partnerships, but also how can we as companies build one another up? How can we as companies really support one another in this space? And we know that, you know, female founded organizations are only 4% of the capital that's allocated at this current time. Hopefully when I come back a year from now, we'll have better numbers, but that we're really using each other as valuable resources and assets as we grow our companies, because the resource of time and knowledge and wisdom is very valuable as well.
I know I think that was the exciting thing about being in San Francisco, meeting you, Maternal Care Summit and Digital Health Summit, they were back to back with each other. And it was just such a nice thing to be able to meet so many amazing women who were founders and co-founders in the space and really trying to, just like you said, you know, kind of do business differently for women's health all over the country and all over the world, of course. But I think those are powerful things, and to just sit with each other and talk to each other. And I know that's where I got to meet you, and it was really a wonderful thing. And I was just so impressed at your excitement and your passion about really looking at a different model and a way to provide a different model. And I just want you to share, you know, when people do this, they usually join for a year, right? And I mean, make sure I'm saying it right. And it's $175 a month. And then you get these 10 visits. But I want people to understand, like, if you think about what people's deductibles are for their insurances or their money they're putting in their HSAs or their FSAs anyway, I mean, this is just such an amazing, to me, way to have integrative healthcare with such good information at your fingertips and have a guide and a director and people helping you make that happen. So, you know, I want to challenge women out there. Listen, if you value your health and you want to make a change, this is an absolutely perfect way to have someone help you in the driver's seat who can walk you through all of this. Because again, you're getting 6 visits with the functional medicine, and then you're getting 4 visits with the nutrition component. And then you're, you know, if your testing is paid for through your insurance, that's great. And some of it maybe isn't, but you work through that. And I'm saying you're already going to spend all this money. I mean, I know people who are spending this money on random other things. I'm like, okay, it doesn't make sense to me. The price point of what this is so doable. And I just want to encourage people. And I know sometimes, you know, people only have the mindset for a good 90 days of change. But I want to encourage people to literally look at this of like, hey, you know, people every year at the beginning of the year always say, you know, I want to take charge of my health and have a better life. I'm like, okay, well, this is a way, right, to choose this thing and then have help to keep going in it the whole year. I mean, I think that's the beautiful tool of it. Did I miss anything of it? Because it really is, I think, so powerful. And just because in the work that I do, I constantly have women say, well, I can't do this and I don't know how to find that and I don't know who to talk to about this. And I'm like, okay, this is a really nice way to get down to the root causes of some of our health issues, right?
Absolutely. And I think some of it is like a trick of the mind in terms of just reallocating your healthcare dollars, right? Like thinking about, if we're going to do healthcare differently and we're going to get this different structure around our healthcare, then what are we spending for that premium every month? Do I have to spend that? You know, because people will say that is, you know, well, I'm already spending so much on my premium, but what are you getting for that? Right? Like, what are you actually getting for that premium that you're paying every month? And is there any room to bring that down and to reallocate your healthcare spending in a way that gets you supportive care? I think another place is the HSA, the FSA, right? If you work for an employer that's putting, you know, matching your funding and putting money into these accounts, then use that. Don't let it go to waste, right? Like, that's an amazing way to get paid for these services, paid for functional testing through those HSAs and FSA accounts. Also, if you're taking the 25 supplements from a previous provider, think about, you know, the beauty of it, being able to visit with somebody that's going to say, okay, well, what, let's clear out this supplement cabinet and really what's on auto ship every month and what really is needed and what really is not. And you probably will find your $175 right there pretty easily.
I was going to say that exact thing. I think if you go home and you look at your supplement counter or cabinet or whatever you want to say, you're like, okay, hold the door here. Like, really? Like, I think that's the beauty of working with somebody, because you know, you're not buying things you don't need. You're buying the things that you actually need, that you actually know are going to make a difference. That's the key that we're after.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And we know, as functional medicine providers, we ask a lot of our patients, right? We know that we're not giving out a magic pill or a prescription, right? We're asking people to come ready to make change and ready to implement the things that we're recommending. But we're also going to recommend things that give you the outcomes that you're looking for. And I think that that's the difference, right? Is that we value women's time, we value women's effort, and that we're going to recommend things that actually do start to move the needle and get them the care change that they're looking for.
Absolutely. And it's so personalized. This is the beauty of it, right? This is what we want and what we need as women. You know, you want to get down to business with something. You're too busy with everything else. So you need to have that very thing that's so concentrated and so specific just to you. And then you're going to feel 10 times better. And that's really the beauty of it. So mm-hmm. Frankie, thank you so much for being with us today. And I don't know, did you have a special or something that you're offering?
Yes, absolutely. So if anybody comes to Wisdom Medicine and lets us know that you heard about us through the podcast, we are offering our referral discount, which is just, you get a free month off of your membership just by letting us know that you listened to this podcast and that you heard about us through this network. And we would be happy to get all of your questions answered in terms of what this looks like. I feel like we've talked about all the details of it, but if you have any other questions, feel free to reach out to us. And we'll be happy to help get you matched with a provider that will be the provider that will get those outcomes that you're looking for.
Thank you, Frankie, so much. It was so fun to be with you, and it's great to be able to meet you at the summit, and we'll just keep working together. I know there's going to be tons of questions. We'll have you back on the show again, but thank you for being here today. And everybody, again, Frankie from Wisdom Medicine, and feel free to reach out with questions to her or to I. We want to really help women have a higher quality of life.
Thank you so much, Sherry. I so appreciate being able to be here with you.
That's great. I love it. All right.